everybody. It's We Talk Comics on the air and in your ear for the 94th time. I am Mo, and I'm proud to bring with you two of the finest minds you could ever meet here in comic world. Of course, the man who is large, Brett.
I'm large?
Yeah.
All right.
You're large. Living large.
Living large.
Brett? Anything else to say, Brett?
Nope.
Good start, Brett. Good.
I try, you know.
Good start to the show. And the man who is in charge, Chris.
I am in charge. I'm in charge of that 18-wheeler riding down the highway.
There you go.
I have no idea what that really means.
None of us do. But we never really do when you're talking. So it's not unusual. Anyways, this week, of course, Keith is our embedded reporter is on location somewhere getting the scoops. But without him, the news will go on, even though this week we're calling this show episode 94, The Weekly News Without Cup Reporter K. So looking forward to that. It's going to be a ton of news to get to. But before we do that, I just want to mention news. It's there. Reviews are there. But Comicosity, our sponsor of the news, doesn't just have those things. They have assembled, in the last year, the finest talent of comic book bloggers that you could ever possibly imagine, giving some of the most inventive and informative and opinionated blogs you could ever possibly imagine. I can't recommend Comicosity enough. Of course, as you guys know, I'm there myself on average 2-3 times a day. Anything to add about Comicosity, gentlemen?
Yes, it formats itself nice to an iPhone.
Gotta like
I
that.
Loaded it up today. It looks good. A lot of websites don't, but Comicosity does. You can read on the go.
Yeah, and lots to read is good stuff. And I believe Brett writes something for them. Brett, what do you write for them?
I write Numbers Game and Access All Ages.
Numbers Game. One of those ones I'm talking about. Like going to class, gentlemen, learning and fun.
And fun. And, you know, yep. Because, you know, Comicosity, it's like the A-team of comic book sites.
There you go. There you go. Brett, if you were to explain what Numbers Game is to people, what would you say?
It is an analysis of the current month's sales from a, you know, in my case, somewhat irreverent perspective. But you know, just looking at the numbers and trying to break it down and going a little more in-depth than somebody who was just staring at it for a one-time look might get.
So that's right. Go to Comicosity and people like Brett do your thinking for you.
You betcha.
Which someone like me appreciates.
I aim to think for most people.
Yeah, especially me. That's good when you do that. But anyways, we're going to move on to the weekly news without Cup Reporter K. There's a lot of news items here that I have. I'm not sure if that's because it's a heavy week. I know I've gone a little bit into the archives here because we've had some off weeks for various reasons. And some of the stuff may have been mentioned even by Keith and I didn't notice it, or may not have been mentioned. And a lot of this stuff is fresh, but we will get into. But let's open up with Marvel. One of the interesting notes this week is, unfortunately for Marvel, the television series S.H.I.E.L.D., which its first episode opened as the highest rated drama in several years, had quite a significant drop. Its viewership dropped from 11.9 million to 8.4 million, and it had a 3.1 demo rating, down from the record-breaking 4.6. NCIS actually went head-to-head with S.H.I.E.L.D., beat it out, in both total viewers and in the demo. And, you know, both were actually, it was down as well from its season premiere and yet beat out S.H.I.E.L.D. So it's quite a significant seep. It is a little bit worrying, I guess, that the 30% drop in viewership and ratings is somewhat disappointing. And not only that, because those 34% of people that missed out on one of the biggest cameos that you could possibly imagine that came at the end of that episode. I won't go into it anymore, but it's a huge deal. You do want to hear about that cameo. I'm sure you can find out about it over the Helicarrier podcasts. Big drop. Is this a sign of what's to come, gentlemen?
I think people are just trade waiting, man. no matter what, this has a huge afterlife. Hopefully that'll be enough to sustain the series.
We'll have a huge afterlife? I didn't quite get what you're saying, Chris.
Shield, I think, on the secondary market, when it hits Netflix and DVD, I think the sales will be strong there.
Chris, it has to hit those 22 episodes first.
They've been ordered.
It doesn't mean anything.
It was a 20. They can, but they won't. They've got an investment in it. And it's still the biggest hit ABC has, despite the drop.
The thing is, you have to keep in mind is those numbers are still very good, 8.4. But usually this is a trend when you see that first drop from that first episode, that you should be settling in at about 5 to 6 million. And depending on the – it's not so much about that viewership. 5 to 6 million viewers is not bad. It's the 5 to 6 million depending on the cost of the series, which will be slightly higher than the average series.
I think they're safe where they are. Marvel's got huge amounts riding on this. They will support it. We'll see. But I'm one bad week is not enough to even make me blank. So
it's week two. It's not a bad week. I think it's worrying.
It was a great premiere, and then we had a bad week.
It's not a bad. It's the loss to NCIS that's scary.
No, it's not.
NCIS is huge.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest shows out there.
So you cannot, if they're going to go head to head with one of the biggest shows out there.
CBS, man. NCIS is the new Murder, She Wrote.
NCIS, if you're going head to head with it,
running against it,
if NCIS is going head to head with it, NCIS probably has some thematic elements that you could imagine as being similar, and it's beating it despite the fact that it should be long in the tooth, even though it's huge. How are they possibly going to, like, that's maybe the issue. Maybe it's the wrong series to go head to head with.
Well, maybe it is, but the truth, like, I don't really see it as a core problem. If they take some of the audience away from NCIS and maintain even their dropped viewership, then S.H.I.E.L.D. will be fine. That they'll stand up to it for a while. I certainly wouldn't put that as a concern. If they have a real big concern, that they'll move it. But they're certainly going to get through the first season. I wouldn't worry about that.
I would be more worried if it lost to Arrow or a similar program. I don't think there's huge amounts of competing audience between NCIS and S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you've got the NCIS crowd of like 50 to 60-year-olds and the S.H.I.E.L.D. crowd of 20 to 30-year-olds that I think half the time doesn't even watch TV in the standard format. So,
now, have you guys heard about the appearance of who it was? I mean, Chris, you've probably already seen the episode. Who it is?
No,
that shows up?
Actually, I haven't. I have it here in Canada. It's available for free on the CTV app. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I haven't had a chance as of yet.
So,
I have heard.
I haven't heard.
The grindstone.
Yeah. Well, we're not planning to say, Brett, if that's what you're worrying. If we were, I would have already said it.
I figured.
I'm just wondering, does it create any excitement for you, Chris?
No, not particularly. I'm glad to see that cameo to take place. But I would rather see a larger tie-in to the other properties outside the Avengers, with the second Captain America movie coming up and like that. I would have liked to see some callback to there rather than straight to the Avengers.
Okay. Let's move on then to New York Comic Con, where Marvel will be announcing a bunch of new titles. The New York Comic Con, in order to create the hype for this, what they've been doing is releasing a bunch of covers of books that Marvel just simply states one or two words on the cover, and the creators who will be working on this, but don't give any more details. Among these is Something Higher by Kelly Sue DeConnick and David Lopez. Let me try that one more time. Kelly Sue DeConnick, and David Lopez. Those names aren't as hard as they sound, but Something Higher also reveals so far as Overdrive to be written by Felipe Smith. Artist is Tradmore, I believe is how you pronounce his name. Richard Eisenhoff will be doing something called Wrath. And probably the one that's getting the most buzz is Nathan Edmondson and his activity partner, artist Mitch Garrods. They'll be doing something called The Hunted. Now, Edmondson was rumored to be doing an upcoming Black Widow series, but with the words The Hunted, there's a lot of speculation out there that perhaps this is something to do with Kraven the Hunter. So any thoughts, gentlemen?
I think it's Black Widow.
You think so?
I'm going with Black Widow on that one. And my fingers are crossed for Team USA for Overdrive, but I'm frequently wrong.
Yeah. Wolf! Wolf!
For Chris here, here's one for you, Chris, from Marvel. The rumor is that Thunderbolts will be getting a full Marvel Now relaunch.
Awesome. As long as it's the right team.
A special one-hour episode of Ultimate Spider-Man will be coming out for Halloween. It's going to feature Blade and the Howling Commandos. The members of the Howling Commandos in this iteration are, of course, Blade, Werewolf by Night, Nikantu, the living Mummy, Frankenstein's Monster, and Man-Thing. So a special one-hour version of Ultimate Spider-Man. Anybody watch the cartoon? Will that be any good?
I've watched a couple episodes here and there. They got the wrong Howling Commandos.
They sure
man.
As hell do, don't they?
Oh, man, you know, Dum Dum Dugan and Nick Fury, that's all I really need, man. Maybe have them fight a war wheel. That's awesome, man. I'd cross the street for that crap.
All right, the FF film franchise Living is getting money. A reboot, of course, as you know, from Marvel. They have attached Simon Kinberg on board as a writer and producer. Previous work from him includes X-Men Days of Future Past, Sherlock Holmes, Jumper, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and X-Men The Last Stand, as well as XXX State of the Union. He's written all of those, so we'll forgive him for X-Men The Last Stand and some other good work there. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do with that series. That's the big news we have from the moment from Marvel. Let's move on to Dark Horse, gentlemen. Dark Horse actually has some very interesting news this week as well. On June 1st, 2014, and this is quite significant, even if it doesn't seem to be at first, Dark Horse is going to switch from Diamond Book Distributors to Random House for their book market distribution. They'll still be in partnership with Diamond for the comics and for the direct market itself, but this is designed to increase its graphic novels, properties such as Avatar and its manga within bookstores. Random House actually already has carries a competing manga line, so I'm not sure how this will work with them. But is that a sign of the times?
I think it's a good move. I like it. Really, book distributors have been carrying less and less comic book product, and part of that is through the distribution. Diamond does not give the proper respect to book retailers. They have the direct market sewn up, so, you know, they don't focus on that secondary market. I'm excited. I think this means more comic books readily available to a person like me who doesn't have a comic book store in their town.
Well, they might have some trades of their books, but largely, I mean, we'll see things like, say, Avatar, Star Wars, things like that is apparently the plan. They've been working very hard to build coming on that. Working very hard to build up their separate universes, actually. Of course, everybody knows the Dark Horse. In the last few years, they've kind of gotten a reputation as being Mignola's, you know, playground for the Hellboy universe. But in addition to the Hellboy universe, they have been attempting, actually, despite the fact that Star Wars is now has property and owned by Marvel, well, ABC, essentially. Disney, guess you would say, who owns ABC. It's all tied in together. It seems like a bit of a monopoly. It's getting a bit much. But what we're seeing is actually them really working to expand that universe, the Star Wars universe, interestingly. In addition, they're actually working very hard to expand the Aliens universe. And so based on that, we're going to see Captain Midnight creator Joshua Williamson. And he'll be writing a new Predator series that's going to be supposedly quite tied into the Aliens Prometheus universe that they're building up. And for those of you who may not have noticed what's happening yet, Captain Midnight is the flagship title of Dark Horse's exciting, expanding superhero line, Project Black Sky. So thoughts on the current, another move by Dark Horse, their current strategy.
It's the same strategy that they had before. They're just trying it again with their with the superheroes. We'll see if they can actually pull it off this time.
Well, it is. But you know what? It's the same strategy they had when they had the most momentum many years ago.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So is it time to do it again?
I think Captain Midnight is the wrong character to be launching superheroes with. I like him. We all like the book, but he could easily be folded into the Magnolia universe, and it, no one would notice.
Well, the whole point
is they need a more distinctive hero universe to separate from the rest of their books,
like barbed wire.
Well, barbed wire. Well, is...
I think barbed wire would be a step up. I'm not saying that's the way they should go.
Well, Captain Midnight does have a spin-off character coming out of that book, Skyman, by Joshua Hale, Filikoff, Manuel Garcia, and Javier Bergantino Menor. I certainly hope I'm last in that, but that'll be the next project coming out, or the next book to come out of Project Black Sky, and.
So and have see what you kind of seen success them? He's they a have. Repaint of Captain Midnight.
Well, perhaps we'll see what he has when he has his own artist. We'll see how he looks then, Chris.
I'd like to say I'm excited, but I'm not.
I just think it's nice to see somebody else creating a fully fledged superhero universe.
I'll trust it when I, you know, when it's been around for.
We've been fooled before.
Yep.
Couple of notes from Image, not much going on there, but Anthony Johnson and Christopher Mitten created Wasteland, and they have a new book coming out called Umbrawl. It'll launch on November 13th. It's a dark fantasy about a street smart thief raised by smugglers who has she has her jewel heist that she's performing interrupted when she witnesses the murder of the king and queen. So that should be interesting work. I trust it coming from Image that it'll be a quality book, and I'm quite certain we'll review issue number one of that for WeViews. Also coming, or just kind of an interesting note coming out of them, Matt Fraction, of course, was the writer of is the writer of Hawkeye, quite a successful book. Also his latest book, Image, from Sex Criminals, issue number one of Sex Criminals outsold issue number one of Hawkeye. So that's, I think, speaks to the success and buzz around that book. Any thoughts? I don't know if it's outselling the current issues, if Hawkeye's gained or stayed steady in sales, but number one of Sex Criminals outsells number one of Hawkeye.
I think it's just that, honestly, like right now, Matt Fraction is a hot writer, whereas when he was started with Hawkeye, he wasn't quite as hot a writer. But it's because of Hawkeye that Sex Criminals sold well.
You know what? This one has me at a loss. I cannot explain this. I didn't think it would sell huge. Everything about Sex Criminals sort of confuses me. I noticed it was available in the Comicology app. And they don't sell adult comics. And as I remember, that one was pretty graphic. Everything about this book confuses me.
Let's move on to the indies. The indies have quite a few news items as well. A few of these coming from our friends over at Boom Studios. Probably the biggest one. This I think, has the potential to be a game changer. Boom Studios and 20th Century Fox have signed a first look real deal. It gives Fox and its divisions access to all the libraries of both Boom and Arkea Entertainment. Boom's going to have access to Fox's back catalog of properties as well to select projects for comic book reboots, which then it will in turn will be used by Fox to produce remakes. Could be massive.
I think Boom is one of the smartest studios out there. They're just killing it, man. This deal is great for everybody involved. And they're the ones who should be starting a superhero universe.
Brett, do you have any thoughts on that?
It's a clever idea. It's an interesting way for... I think it's kind of a win-win scenario for both Fox and Boom. I mean, you kind of get that chance to dust off some of the relics of the past and have them reimagined in a you know, fun and different way. And so I think there's a great chance to sell comics and maybe even get a new TV show out of it.
Well, not a TV show, apparently a film, though a TV show as well. I think what's interesting to me, Brett, here, and I want your comment on this specific part, the idea that these properties that Fox has that have been sitting dormant for a while, the Boom will take them, make a comic book, and that'll be the version that goes to the screen, not a remake of the original series, but a remake, an adaptation of their remake. In other words, whatever, Boom has a lot of power now. And the idea, I think a lot of trust from Fox that these people will do with their projects enough, give them enough creative oomph that whatever they do with it, they can trust will be good enough to put on the screen. Do you kind of see it that way as well?
Oh, I do, but it's a no lose scenario. You give out a property that you're not really doing anything with. They make a comic out of it. If it's good enough, then you can do something with it. If it's not good enough for what you want to do with, then that's fine. It's still a comic book, and it still has your name on it. It's advertising.
Manimal, this series.
One could only wish. Come on.
Manimal.
I'm in.
All right, well... Boom has had some success lately. One of them is from our friend, their managing editor, Bryce Carlson. We had an interview with him when he was here in Calgary for our comic convention a few months ago. Since then, he's released his first book, Hit. Hit number one actually sold out of its 10,000 print run. It's a good book. We gave it a good look on the WeViews here. And congratulations to the success for Bryce. And, the second printing, if you missed that first printing, we certainly recommend you pick it up. X-Files number one also, by the way, has gone to its fourth printing. So also very, very successful. Let me see here. Also from Boom. George Perez's first book under his new exclusive contract with the company has been announced. It is known as She-Devils, about eight different superheroines of varying backgrounds and powers coming together as a group. So we'll see how that turns out. The teaser art, of course, is being George Perez is really, really nice.
Does it have rubble? I'm expecting rubble.
There's a chance. I can't recall enough. I think it might be. I think there might be them. I remember looking at it and thinking that looks good, whether it has rubble or not. I think it's them breaking through a wall, though, so I'm pretty sure it has rubble.
I feel like that's
probably a brick wall.
That's a Perez speciality right there.
That looks good, though. Now, nobody draws rubble like George Perez.
Betcha.
I missed. Did it say he would be writing the series as well?
You know what? I don't know.
I'm kind of hoping for no.
I think there's a good chance he is, but I don't know for sure.
But I'm hoping hoping.
I love his art so much, though. So,
well, again, I think
and 12 heroines. That the chances are eight. There should be some eight. There should be some cleavage in that. I'm thinking.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. All right, moving on to something that's not directly related to comic books. It's actually a comic strip, but Stars and Stripes, the newspaper that's. For the servicemen within the military, the United States military, has for the first time in 63 years dropped Beetle Bailey from its daily strips. It still will run on the weekends, but Stars and Stripes itself has actually said that its sales are being doubled in digital compared to print, so I think that's just continuing a trend that we've already seen. But that's kind of, I have to admit, a little sadness, a little nostalgia sadness for me there to hear that one.
When was the last time you read Beetle Bailey?
Actually, you know what? Not as long as you think. I have a trade paperback, a collection of the strips that I pull out periodically every few years. So.
And those read like new, don't they?
Actually, I do. It really does make me laugh.
Because they repeat the same thing over and over again.
Okay, especially this one because it's a few years ago. There's a few jokes that in the modern politically correct age you couldn't get away with. Nevertheless, 63 years. Done. Mark Miller, speaking of films, because we were talking about that before we talked about Stars and Stripes, has a children's book coming out called Kindergarten Heroes. It's being planned for a big screen adaptation. IDW's book, The Other Dead. Are you guys familiar with The Other Dead? Not The Walking Dead, but The Other Dead from IDW.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, I think I read an issue. I didn't like it.
Well, it just came out. If you read it, it just came out a couple weeks ago here. It sold out from distribution centers yesterday of its first print run of 10,500 copies, and backup orders are piling up like mad for it. It's a parody. It's featuring Dick Cheney being eaten by zombies, and the hero of the book is a gun-toting Barack Obama gunning down the zombies. So this is a massive success. Now, Chris, now that you've heard that, did you read it?
Yeah, no, I don't remember that.
You would have remembered that. That's why when you said that, I thought, no, you didn't read it, because you would not have forgotten this.
Yeah. I think Mark Miller had a bowel movement this morning that's been optioned for a 3-picture deal, too. So.
Well, you know, it's funny. I never think of Mark Miller and think a children's property. And yet here's Kindergarten Heroes, which is a children's property and will either likely be a cartoon, probably a 3D cartoon.
I anticipated it being ranked PG-13.
It sounds like it's going to be maybe G or PG, quite certainly. But who knows? Moving on here. Of course, comics right now, everybody talks about how they're kind of still a niche product or a cult following. Well, that's not necessarily the case in Europe. The biggest selling book this year so far in 2013 comes from Europe. It is Asterix and the Picts. It's the first book to ever be not drawn by Albert Uderzo, who has been with the character since his creation in 1959. It's expected this week to sell out of its 2 million print run in its first week. And that's in the French language, 2 million print run in the French language alone. That'll be approximately $30 million in sales that they'll be generating from this title. So comics still doing well if it's the right thing, huh? I think those numbers are staggering.
Well, it's Asterix, man.
It's Asterix without the creators, though.
It's Asterix, okay? It's all...
Hey, Asterix is still huge.
It's also French language, man. The Smurfs sold over there.
Not like this. I think it's interesting that this actually, the relaunch, sells better than the last book that Albert Uderzo worked on for the title. So, but yeah, that's kind of the end of the indies. We have already done Image. We've done Dark Horse. Is there anybody left?
Nope, I don't think so.
There is. John Diggle, character in the Arrow TV series, is set to make his debut in Green Arrow number 24. This is the first of many crossover characters from Arrow into the current book being done by Jeff Lemire. Lemire, Canadian icon, Jeff Lemire. Treasure, in fact, much like Scott Snyder. Indiegogo at DC has a campaign of you have not seen it yet, and Chris, I know, is a supporter of all sorts of things on Indiegogo and Kickstarter. They do have a campaign called We Can Be Heroes. Just going to make another mention of this one. I think we probably have brought this up previously, but it's to fight the hunger crisis in the Horn of Africa. You can get stuff from the Arrow TV show, Green Lantern-related items, and now Forever Evil. This week is their Justice League, so do keep an eye out for that. It's for a very good cause. Indiegogo, DC Entertainment, We Can Be Heroes. Damian, Son of Batman, number one, written and drawn by Andy Kubert, is looking at a possible future for the version of the character. This version of the character first made his appearance in Batman 666. And this version is, like I say, a possible future for Damian, which is hilarious because he's dead, right?
Last time I looked. But
anyways, a possible future for Damian coming out just before Halloween, October 30th. I love Andy Kubert's art, but drawn or written by as well? I don't know. Any excitement out there at all?
You know what? I like the character, so yeah. But if he's writing, I don't know. I've I don't want to say he's a bad writer because I've never read him.
Well, we'll see what happens with the first issue.
I'll be cautiously optimistic.
All right. Chu writer John Layman's next DC project will be announced at New York Comic Con. A little spoiler for something coming up in just a moment. Francis Manapul and Brian Buccello. Buccello? Thanks, Brett. That guy. Of course, they're famous for their work on The Flash since the relaunch. They'll be taking over. They've recently left The Flash to take over Detective Comics. Probably a good move for both them and the book. So we'll move on from that. I got a couple other items. This one, I guess, would count under probably the independent scenes here. These are just coming in here over the last couple hours, so I haven't had too much of a chance to look at them yet. But Ministry, the band Ministry, their front man Al Jurgensen is going to have a book coming out called Ministry, The Devil's Chord, The Chronicles of Alien F. Jurgensen, a 13-issue run. Each issue matching up to one of the band's albums, so he is the writer of that. He's hoping to bring upon other music icons like Trent Reznor, Billy Gibbons, and Billy Haynes as characters within the series. So that may be fun. It may also be a train wreck. I mentioned a little bit about New York Comic Con, and of course they're gearing up to have a lot of stuff go on there. We mentioned how John Layman has his next DC project there. Leaked has been apparently everything that they're going to announce at New York Comic Con. So this is spoiler work. If this is true or not, we don't know. I am getting this news from bleedingcool.com. But this is every book and creative team DC is announcing at the New York Comic Con in a week and a half. At least the week and a half of the time where we're recording this. So probably a little less by the time you hear it. So we'll see. I'm not sure. But I'm just going to go through these books. And if you want to comment, jump in at any point in time. So we'll see Shazam with Geoff Johns and Sterling Gates, both as co-writers. Doug Monkey on art. Plastic Man. Gail Simone will write Plastic Man. Ethan Van. What's that?
I'm happy. Plastic Man.
Plastic Man with Gail Plastic. Simone.
Yeah, she's competent.
Yeah, and well, it's no, Plastic no. Man. It's Plastic Man with.
I got my fingers crossed for Baby Plas.
Well, Gail Simone and Ethan Van Sciver on art, whose style is not that cartoony. He's really, really good. It makes me wonder. I don't think this will be the Plastic Man that you know and love, Chris. But who knows? Maybe it will be. I bet you it has some humor. Certainly, Gail Simone has a pretty wicked sense of humor. So, Sinestro Corps. I always do that. Sinestro Corps. Brett will be interested in this one. Is Tyler Kirkham on art? The writer, Matt Kent. The Question is getting his own series. I think we're all happy about that. We're all big fans of The Question. Ray Fox is writing. Simon Kurdansky on art. Here's one for Keith. Dan Jurgens is writing and drawing Booster Gold.
Wow, what a real, you know, like, shock. Dan Jurgens. I mean, wow. He's really like, going out of his comfort level.
Yeah. But we know they have at least one buyer.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe a few more. Red Robin.
I don't know if Dan Jurgens has the experience to write Booster Gold, though.
No, it's true. That could be, it could be a stretch, but.
We have.
I mean, does he even know who he is?
Oh, probably never. He'll catch up. Somebody will fill him in. Red Robin's coming with Tony Bedard writing and Marcus Toe on art.
Oh, that's good.
There's an Aquaman spinoff. John Ostrander and Geraldo Borges. So Ostrander back working on another series called The Others. Titans. It features apparently the classic Rogers, roster of the Titans without Wally is what it says here. But Titans with James Tinian IV and R.B. Silva on art. Here's an interesting one because this next one, Brett and Keith, or Chris, sorry, Keith if he was here too, is one that you'd go, has failed so many times, this will fail again, but there's an X factor. Doom Patrol is coming back. Chris Spouse will do the art. The writer, Tom Taylor, of course, okay, of Injustice.
That, that's going to be awesome. And I wouldn't call Doom Patrol a failure over at Vertigo. It had a significant run.
If in Vertigo it did. You're right. That's fair. But yeah, we'll see if it's never been able to cross over into the mainstream. So we'll see if Tom Taylor is able to do that and how well will he have a handle on these characters.
Oh,
and I'm guessing very well.
Oh, yeah. He's the perfect hand to handle these strange characters.
Yeah,
I'm loving this. I couldn't pick a better team for Doom Patrol. You ask me if Morrison should write it? No, I want Tom Taylor.
I agree. I'm really excited to hear that. So Cyborg, getting a series with Kevin Grievous, and no artist announced yet. Grievous, Grievoux. Any idea, Brett?
Grievous?
That doesn't sound right. Anyways, Superman Weekly. Rotating creative teams will be working on Superman Weekly. The first art will be Jeff Johns and Jeff Lemire writing. Then there's some creative team changes. Of course, The Flash. Now we'll have Jeff Parker writing with Gabriel Hardman on art. Batgirl, Marguerite Bennett writing with Emmanuel Lupacini. I can't pronounce that. Nobody could. If you called tennis for your entire life, you could not pronounce the name of artists today working at DC. Catwoman, John Layman, that's apparently the book to be announced. True writer John Layman will be taking over Catman with Kano on art and Birds of Prey. Tim Seeley is looking to be the writer for Birds of Prey, Gilliam March on art. So we'll see how much of this is true or not. Any last thoughts on the weekly news with Cub Reporter K or without him?
Just on the announced books. Does anyone like Cyborg? I get the feeling
No.
I mean, he was stuffed down our necks forever, and he's just been attached to more popular projects. Why are we doing this?
He's like the hero of that Justice League Doom movie they put out, and nobody, that's the one nobody ever talks about as being really good. Like,
I mean, give Changeling a shot. I'd buy that book. Or Beast Boy, or whatever they're calling him this week.
Yeah.
Starfire. At least she's hot.
Well, one thing we do know with all those titles, they got a lot of canceling coming up.
That's
I'm
true,
a little
actually.
Concerned about the Spider, about Action Comics.
Brett, you're the inside the numbers guy there. Why were you concerned about Action Comics?
Superman Weekly. They can't sustain all the Superman books they have. So sure, I'm guessing
Man of
they
Steel,
go...
Man goes, of Steel is what they're looking at. The success of Man of Steel fuels the books.
Yeah, I mean, and they're going to have...
They want to... Yeah.
Like, so they'll have four Superman books. That's... They've sustained that before, so...
Yeah, exactly. The idea of how popular Superman is right now and how he'll get even more popular when you put him in there with a Batman movie coming up, no. They're not worried about it. They're looking long-term on that one. And Action Comics is not the one I would think would go. I don't see that being an issue. I do think, Brett, you're the inside-the-numbers guy. Most likely DC books off the top of your head to be canceled.
Well, I would think that it wouldn't surprise me to see the movement canceled. I guarantee that the Green Team is going to be hacked out now, and I'm not even 100% sure what is still running to a certain degree on some of those. I mean, the Dial H, if it's not already canceled,
it was canceled.
Yeah. So yeah, they've got a lot of well, who knows? I mean, I wonder if Larfleeze will be turfed.
Yeah, it seems likely, unfortunately. Or maybe they're just going to finally go past the idea of 52 books.
Maybe, but it seems like they've tied so much of their branding to the new 52 that it seems unlikely that they would.
Been under 52 for quite a while.
They've been a little under, but.
That was a lot of books.
That's a lot of books, so I expect that they're going to have to shave some stuff off. But you know, there's always lower level stuff that you can make go away.
All right. Speaking of which, we're going to move on to the Wii Views for the week. because Brett, we're
here I come to save the day,
saving you from bad comics.
Damn right. So we're gonna move on to the WeeViews. If you're wondering why there's no main topic, number one, there was a lot of news and we got opinions on all of it, and that went longer than your normal news section. Hopefully it went as smoothly and people enjoyed it, even without Keith here to kind of guide us through it. Back onto the WeeViews, we normally do 2, 3, sometimes 4 books. I think 5 might be the most we've ever done. And often we'll only do a couple, like say 2 or 3. I think, what is it, 11 books this time, Brett?
I feel like there's 11, yep.
Well, there's a lot of books out there that we wanted to give some attention to, so we're trying something a little different, and this book is going to be, or this week, we're doing WeeViews, we're going heavy on it. Brett, where do you think we should open with?
Oh, good Lord. Why don't we go in alphabetical order?
Oh, what the hell would that be?
I know, it seems
so all
crazy.
All new X-Men would be number one then. All new X-Men, of course, the X-Men team that was brought back by the current Beast, back into the current timeline, in order to, I guess, talk some sense into Cyclops and have stayed here. This is their adventures. It's written by Mike Costa, pencil and ink by Chris Anka. That's Chris with a K. Brett, thoughts?
Well, it's interesting. You know, it's a 3-part series, and I see that the second one is going to be with the Hulk. So it's not. It's just a special. This will be the only time we see the all new X-Men on the cover of this one, kind of thing. But it looks like a time travel type story. I don't know what the third one will be. Probably even Superior Spider-Man. I would say
Superior.
Yeah. But I mean, overall, like, I wasn't sure on the first few pages of this one. It seemed a little bit off for me, but I haven't been reading the series of late because I haven't really been reading much of anything of late, unless it's got a Valiant in the title. But by the end, I found myself kind of enjoying the story. I liked the characterization of the Beast. And I thought he did a good job with Superior Spider-Man, and there was a couple of laughs there. So given that it's only 3 issues, I'll probably be in for the 3.
Yeah, I have to agree. It was a solid, nice little book. Didn't reinvent the universe. When you have a 3-issue limited series like this that has the special tag and the price, I kind of want them to break a little new ground, and I don't think this is the series to do that. But if you're looking for an introduction to the all-new X-Men, Hulk working with S.H.I.E.L.D., or Superior Spider-Man, if you're not reading any of these books, I think it's a good introduction. But if you don't want to spend the bucks, you're not missing too much. It's just a nice, quiet, fun read. But in the end, if you miss it, it's not worth committing suicide over. I'm talking you down right now.
I don't think it ties too closely to the actual series, so you don't have to worry about it being in continuity in that regard.
But I did think it was a nice introduction to the all-new X-Men that I wasn't really all that familiar with because they're X-Men.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with it at all, and yet I came right in. Both the explanation and then kind of the characterization at the beginning got me into it, even though I wasn't enjoying the first little bit. And I'm going to get my major annoyance with this series out of the way right away here and see if you guys have any thoughts on this. So the idea is that the current Beast has pulled this team from the past in. So let's say Cyclops is currently 26 and X-Men first appeared when he was 16. That would mean that we're talking about 2003. I think things like New York being crowded and Times Square having some fancy lights and cell phones being around was still there in 2003. What do you guys think?
Oh, you mean there's a comic that has an awful sense of time? No way.
You mean when Clark Kent doesn't wear his glasses, he's Superman?
Like, seriously, it was bugging me so much. I'm like, why are these characters acting?
Why the hell are you thinking about that,
like,
even though?
No doubt. Like,
Bobby walks past there, Bobby Iceman walks past and goes, I knew spandex would take off. Like, spandex by 2003 for people doing yoga in the park wasn't already a big thing. Like, no, they still had – spandex was still just around the corner as coming around to a major thing. I'm like, this, if they pulled them out of the 1960s, but that doesn't make any sense either. So anyways, so this is really bugging me because this is just bad. But it's bad. But here's the thing. The series itself, it's fun. It's like when you I mean, much like a lot of stuff, it doesn't seem consequential at first, and that's bugging me because everything seems too light and too unimportant. But as it goes on, I'm like, well, it's just got funny dialogue. It's got good characterization. It's got a sense of fun. It got a nice sense of timing. I enjoyed this book. By the time it's over and it announces that Hulk's coming in to deal with these characters and Spider-Man's already there and they're fighting a Doc Ock from the past or maybe not the past. We don't know. I'm like, that was a lot of fun. I can't wait to read the next one. So it actually might be my favorite book of the week.
It might be mine, too.
Brett, where do you want to go now? We're going alphabetical. Do you want to go next again? Why don't you open up?
Sure. And
talk about Bushido from Image.
Bushido. All right. Who
does? Tell everybody the concept.
Well, the concept is that white guy gets, gets basically taken off a ship, off a boat, and then raised in a Japanese samurai family, and he's trained, and he wants to be a samurai, but because he is a gaijin, he cannot be a samurai, and...
No, it's actually because he's not skilled enough.
No, it's because he's white.
Yeah, No, it was a white guy.
Yeah, he's...
No, it's because he's not skilled enough.
No, it's totally because...
Because it kept but on saying his dad
his father trained him extra, so he was good enough.
No, his father trained him extra, and he still wasn't as good as his brother, who became the who didn't like the fact that he was going to become a, you know, was getting all the extra attention, but was still better than him. He wasn't as good as his brother. His father trained him so he would have the chance to be a samurai, and still couldn't become one.
See, I think you're reading way too much into his narration.
And Mo, it says, I wanted nothing more than to call myself samurai. But my dreams and the dreams of my father meant nothing in the face of tradition. Gaijin could never become samurai.
Oh, crap. And I missed that whole line. All right. Well, that changes. Actually, it shouldn't change anything. Other than that, Brett, there's vampires in this. Let's move on.
Yes. Anyways, it says it's based off a screenplay, Rising Sun. Now...
Which has got to be a Japanese film.
Yeah, one would say that. And you know the...
It lists the creator of that film, and it's not a name I could pronounce, so I'm going to bother butchering it, but...
See, and that's the thing. Like, when I saw this had vampires, like, right before the story, I was not excited. And then I started reading the story, and I was just like, wow, this is actually pretty good. This is... I kind of like these characters. I'm into it. And then the vampires showed back up again, and I hated it. So... Freaking vampires.
They're vampires.
Even without the vampires, if you've seen that Tom Cruise last samurai movie.
Oh, I'm sorry. You said, have you seen this Tom? Come on.
I haven't.
You just. Who?
It's like,
no.
It's like Tom 14 Cruise. Hours long of Tom Cruise. How?
Who watches that?
So, no, I haven't seen it, and no, I won't be back because it's got vampires.
Waste of paper.
The thing is that this book has the artist in this book, and let's give the creators of this book here out. Rob Levin and Jasada Suthi. Jasada Suthi renders beautiful pages, but not good comic book art. At times the panels bleed into each other. At times the panels are too open or too crowded, intermixed with each other. You know, a few beautiful scenes, but as an artist, I don't think he's mastered the storytelling aspect yet. Brett, you look like you wanted to say something there.
Well, one of the things that I've really noticed about this week is that there is a large volume of the art that comes out this week that is photorealistic.
Yeah.
And this is one of those books.
Yeah.
And so, in some cases it works, in some cases it doesn't, and in this case it's to me it was close to being able to work, but it still fell flat.
I don't think of these photorealistic books that this was the worst. I also don't think it's the best.
No, absolutely not.
worst.
So that does hurt it. And then just simply the generic, I think the dialogue and the narration, the pacing is all done, but the generic story idea, like you say, it is mixed matches of, it's just obvious grabbing from other concepts that you've read before. It's tough to get too excited about this book. It's just, it's
a generic it's story, there. Like you say.
It's just a generic story. Yeah. So, Brett, let's move on here since Chris gave everything. Captain America, Living Legend, number one. And this is done by
Andy Diggle.
Oh, give me. Yeah, Andy Diggle does the writing.
And Addie Granoff.
There you go.
Well, I
speaking
was,
of photorealistic.
Yeah, well,
Addie Granoff.
And that's it. But here's the difference because for me, Addie Granoff is one of the best of the photorealistic, and so he would be my favorite. In this case, I'm happy to see him on a Captain America book. His work on Iron Man Extremis was amazing, and I mean, as far as this book goes, like it's kind of a shame to me that it's a mini series, because I feel like with the one character that they're introducing for Captain America to go up against, that it's going to be just in this mini series, and afterwards it's kind of going to be thrown away and we're never going to hear mention of him again, kind of thing. And so that's unfortunate, because so far this seems like a pretty interesting story. Not a lot happens in it. I mean, it's just basically, you know, as Keith would say, unpacking the story and kind of putting it to a place where the action can begin. But I expect to see some interesting stuff in the coming issues. And given how much I like the art, I would certainly stick.
Yeah, I have to agree. Andy Diggle. It is Diggle, right?
Diggle, yep.
Yeah.
Gives a really interesting first issue. I love them exploring the beginnings of the Cold War. And as this expands out, I can't wait to see which direction it heads. A good series. A proper use of a limited series, I'd say, actually, to expand the Captain America universe rather than just because they got some guy from the past coming in to write Captain America. I like this a lot.
Yeah, what was this originally called? This originally had a different title. Andy, just give me one second, guys. I'm going to look it up here. Andy Diggle, Captain America. Okay. Originally, this was going to be known as Astonishing Captain America, and it was delayed. And has been changed to Captain America Living Legend. Brett, you mentioned that this we might not see this character again. That's true. I don't know if this is in continuity or not. It's really difficult to tell. It could both work in and it could not be, I suppose.
Well, it does say that it takes place before Captain America 10. Although the funny thing is that when it started, I was, and you know, after the first two pages, I was just like, which Captain America 10? Is that the new Captain America 10 or is that the original Captain America
10? Yeah, it's tough to tell. It is tough to tell, but they could fit it in. We talk about Addie Granoff. Everybody's talking about his art and raving about it, and it's just so amazing. The thing about this is that, like, the story is fine, but it's more that Andy Diggle changes his style for this book, different from what he's done a lot of the times. Andy Diggle in this book tells the story very basic with dialogue and minimal everything. Largely, he's telling just enough to give you the story, and then he knows enough to get the hell out of the way so you can look at Addie Granoff's art and admire that and use that to the story. And that's how good a damn writer Andy Diggle is, that he knows not to overwrite a artist like this, knows how to use the artist's skills to its maximum potential. And there's so many panels that, of the digital version I have of this. I'm going to take a screenshot. That's going to be the podcast. That's going to be this podcast's picture. And I don't know of all these beautiful pages which one I'm going to pick. I'll let you guys maybe even give a vote and help me decide, because there's so many here. So I'm highly impressed by this book because of that. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful book. Brett, let's move on. We got what? The Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, Liberty Annual number one. Image Comics is publishing it, but a lot of publishers actually had a hand in this in some way. What were your thoughts on this anthology book?
Well, I mean, again, it's another we have a couple of anthology books, which is kind of weird this week. But, you know, I thought that the first story, the first page was really good. And I thought that there was some fun, engaging stories along the way. But it ended on a bang with the what if Wortham was right storyline, which I thought was frickin' hilarious.
So very funny.
So, you know, just the concept that, you know, oh, kid reads a comic book, so he suddenly becomes an insane, like, murderer, crazy person. And I just thought, you know, that was spot on. So for me, you know, based on the first and last stories alone, this gets a passing grade, no question. And it's a worthwhile cost, so, you know, buy it no matter what.
Yeah, I buy this every year, and it's never let me down. You might get a bad story here or there. This one, I don't see a bad story. But it's for charity. It's a good comic book charity. You can't go wrong. This is top-notch talent talking about something we're all passionate about. Just don't let stuff get away in the way of story. Buy this book.
Yeah, we see some familiar characters. Captain Midnight, who we talked about earlier, has a place in this book. We have Hack Slash in this book. You know, so there are some familiar characters. I think this is a book. It's a real throwback to underground comic books. When you read this, the style and the stories, the way they're told, all this stuff. It's a real throwback to underground and 70s comic books in a lot of ways, to those independent books in a great way. I think that this is, I think politically, I learned a lot reading this. I knew something about Pussy Riot. I know more about them now. Like, there's a statement to a lot of these stories, and it entertained me. I think it had a lot of really good stuff. Not everything's great, but I think this is really good, and like you say, tremendous, tremendous cause. So highly recommended. Chris, you look like you're troubled.
I was looking at the next book of the list.
Yeah, Chris, why don't you go first then? I'll give you a chance to talk about the next book on the list. I'm just going to look it up here. It's Fantomex. This is done by, give me one second here. Let me look it up. It was written by Andrew Hope. It's art by Sean Crystal, and it's opinions by Chris Beck.
Yeah, Fantomex. This is part of the relaunch of the Max line from Marvel, and I truly did not enjoy this book. Reminded me a lot of Max Fury. Only the writer wasn't as good as Garth Ennis. And I don't like Fury Max. Really, this just has a lot of over-the-top violence for no apparent reason. And it isn't as funny as you'd want it to be this exaggerated. I hated this book. Yeah, that's all I got. It just depresses me.
I also thought that this book sucked. Sean Crystal, I think, actually has some talent under the right circumstances with the right person writing for him on the right type of book. He might be able to give us something interesting. Here, his panels are too open, and it doesn't help a story flow very well, though. But then again, he might be following a script in doing so. But his panels are too open. They don't link well together. And that's the issue, though. He has a nice style that I think has a lot of potential. I should really shut my dog up for making all that noise, but we'll keep going in the background anyways. As far as the story, though, what a mess. Like, I have no idea what was going on. I don't know who any of these characters are. I don't know what any of their abilities are. I don't know what any of their backgrounds are. I don't know what any of their relationships are. I don't know anything about this. I believe Phantom X came from X-Force, if I remember correctly. Plus, what did this book gain by being a adult or mature reader's book, other than a little bit of violence we didn't need and a bunch of profanity that just was there? Like, did it gain anything? Like, sometimes I know that book needs to be told as a mature reader's book, and it's part of the storyline, and it helps it. Saga needs to be a mature reader's book. It's not mature readers in any way to as a marketing ploy, just so the creators can get away with more. What the story is needs to be a mature reader's book. What did this book gain even by this? Like, I don't even understand why you take actually superheroes from your normal universe and put them in a Max book most of the time, to tell you the truth. What's the point of it? I don't know, Brad, what do you think? This sucked. What do you think of other than that? I'm sure you thought it sucked.
You know, yeah, it's not a good book. It's one of those cases where nothing, no part of it fits with everything else. It's like they've taken a whole bunch of puzzle pieces and they've just tried to jam them together as opposed to actually making anything cohesive. The art doesn't fit with the story. The story doesn't fit with the character. And the writing is just, in my opinion, it just tries way too hard to be something that it's not. You know, like, it wants to be desperately wants to be funny, but it's not funny. It just falls flat in virtually every single instance. And I was hoping, like, I actually kind of wanted to like it. Like, after the first couple of pages, there was part of me where I was just like, oh yeah, hopefully I'll like this book. But by the end, it's just like you said, it's a mess. It's just a hot steaming pile of mess that's sitting there on your living room floor, and you're like, well, I guess I'll have to pick up the Phantom X vacuum and clean that sucker up.
Yeah, Brett, let's move on to the next book. From Dark Horse, Grindhouse, Bee Vixens from Mars, Part 1. I look at the cover, says here, sleazeball tested, pervert approved. So those perverts and sleazeballs are Alex DeCampi, who does the script and the lettering. Art's from Chris Peterson. Thoughts, Brett?
Well, it's really right up my alley. Let me tell you, some Grindhouse style bad comic book, you know, style movie style crap. It's crap, don't get me wrong. But there is a part of me that enjoyed the crap. So there's not much to say about it other than it's crap, but I would keep reading it.
I get what you're laying down there, Brent. I can pick it up. Chris?
I actually, I'm conflicted about this book because I want to see this movie. I really did. I this is the type of thing that I live for in cinema. Bad dialogue, stupid plot holes, weird conversations with with convenience store workers. Over the top sax. However, I have to say, I don't think it works as a comic book. I don't need to read this. I'm not picking up issue 2. If they wanted to run a Kickstarter that I could fund a movie for, I'd give them money. But for a second issue, I wouldn't give them money. Didn't enjoy this book too much.
Yeah, I gotta say, Chris, I think you nailed it exactly. This is, as a movie, this would work. As a comic book, this type of story doesn't really work as a comic book. It just, somehow it just points out the silliness of it and just makes it seem silly instead of letting you go along with the fantasy. If they were creating this book, oh, go ahead, actually, you had something to say?
Yeah, no, I just found I was hating myself for smiling at every line in there.
I know.
I mean, it was, yeah, that's dumb, but somehow I knew in a live action format I'd buy it. It's just weird that way, how I can like the subject matter yet hate what I'm doing. It's
and you know what the thing is, it's, yeah, I mean, I can't say I didn't enjoy it, but I can also say I won't read anymore. Just it is just, if this was just this book and it turned out like this, I think I could enjoy it. But when it turns out like this because it tries really hard, like they're trying to do this, then it feels a little unnatural to me, like they're trying too hard to create a Grindhouse book instead of this is just the book that they created. I think that's probably hurting it a little bit for me too. So I also just don't think – I think the last couple pages there really just fell off a cliff too. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll let Brett – if Brett continues the whole story, we'll let him – tell us how it turns out.
I'm willing to bet that it's going to be crap.
But crap you'll enjoy.
Maybe. But crap.
Well, tell us what you thought of Hinterkind. Tell everybody the concept behind Hinterkind, and then when you do so, maybe I'll finally figure out what the concept is. From Ian Edgington and Francesco Trifolgoli. Glooy. It's a Vertigo book from DC. But yeah, explain the concept of this book to the audience, and more importantly, me.
Well, it looks like it's X amount of years after the end of the world, and life is...
I didn't get that.
Life has kind of settled into, the Earth has taken over, Mother Nature has kind of taken over, and what's come out is that now there's more creatures on the Earth than there was before, essentially, and it's a fantasy book, so fantasy creatures also exist in the Earth. There's not that many humans anymore. And I'll tell you, there's one less human that's going to be reading this book as well, and that would be me. Because I'm really not a fan of Ian Edginton to begin with, and frankly, fantasy stories, when fantasy stories are done right, then they're amazing. And I'll point to Fables. Hell, I mean, I'll even go so far as to point to the Paul Jenkins story that was a fantasy story that was still infinitely better than this. And this one, to me, like you say, I mean, it's really hard to tell what actually has happened. And overall, I just don't really have an interest in the characters or the situation.
Chris,
you guys are on crack, man. This was the book of the week. How could you not know it was happening in the far future? This is why the X-Men, why the Last Man meets Killraven or John Carter from Mars. This is fun. How can you not like this book? It has a tiger lion thing.
A Ligon?
An ape with multiple arms. A Ligon. And an ape with multiple arms. And a unicorn eating people, man. That's just some fun stuff. I'm definitely in, man. I'd sign up for a 25-issue subscription just off the first issue, strength of the first issue. I don't get what you don't see in this book.
All right.
Awesome.
I believe the book the press talking about is Fairy Quest from Paul Jenkins and Roberto Ramos. Just to throw that out there. This is awful. Chris is, of course, on crack. Chris, of course, likes anything if it has stuff that seems like it's cool, whether or not it's actually well told, because it's not.
People.
Yeah, actually, you didn't see that. It was just implied. But then that unicorn got shot in the head.
Also cool.
No, not. Because the art was awful, Chris. The art is terrible in this book. Defend that. The art is bad.
I don't think it's so bad.
It's so bad, Chris. This book is constantly asking its artist to give us subtle character moments that he doesn't have the skill to turn off. So his characters are either really completely... What? You're talking.
I'm not talking.
Your mouth was moving. Your mouth was moving, but you weren't saying anything. No, this book constantly has characters that are so badly drawn that they're sitting there and it's either asking them to give you, like he's either giving you absolutely no emotion or he's giving you way too much emotion because he can't draw any subtle emotion. Not to mention the pencils and the inks look like they were beside each other instead of on top of each other. It's just awful. Then you got the horrible storyline in a world where they in no way explain who many of the characters are or why they are what they are. They just sort of happen. There's no context given to the world, given to the characters. The personalities are incredibly boring and generic. The dialogue sucks butt. It's awful.
The page where they show that the main character has a tail is so awful. The face on him is just like his eyes are going two different directions, and I have no idea what he's actually trying to convey with his expression. It's that bad.
This book is just not good quality. It may have been a cool concept, Chris, and maybe a unicorn eating people, but when the unicorn gets shot, that art's bad too. And not to mention, I'm going, okay, so he's got this huge tail, and if it was a little tail, it'd be one thing. It's a massive tail. Next time you see him is in jeans, and I'm like, where the fuck did that tail go?
I don't know where it goes. There's
no logical place that this tail went. You where can't stick it down his pants. Go? You can't stick it down his. Well, he's. They've actually shown that. That I've actually seen.
But yeah,
you can't
but stick it down it the wasn't pants. In you issue can't one.
You can't stick it up the shirt. Well, it didn't need to be in issue one. He was in his costume the whole time. It can't go down his pants. It can't go in the back. It doesn't make any sense. They made such a big deal of this. This is...
Oh, Mr. Logic. no, I really think we're... We got a small snapshot of a larger world, and I want to see that world. This looks like the beginning of a large story. This marks... a return to what I used to love about Vertigo.
Yeah. Well, how about that large story making sense? How about that large story telling you what's around? How about that large story having... See, this marks what you used to like about Vertigo. Didn't Vertigo have good art while I was doing it? Didn't it actually... At what point in time did you read something and go... Except for, well, Invisibles. But what point in time, other than that, did you read something going, I have no idea what's going on, but that was really good? How about just having no idea what's going on and it being really bad?
See, I'm not seeing the really bad...
The truth is that to me this looks like it could very well be an interesting story if it had a good writer and a good artist on it.
Which it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Brett, toss talk.
I wish Keith was here.
Yeah, he would agree with us, Chris.
No, he wouldn't. Oh, no, he likes this kind of thing, just like I do.
No, Chris, no.
I
all of planet Earth, you're the one who liked this. There's a book that just came out from Marvel Knights, Spider-Man 99 Problems. One of five, Matt Kent writes this one. Marco Rudy is the artist. Brett, you were really looking forward to it. Did it meet your expectations?
You know, I had no idea what to expect because, I mean, with Matt Kent, I've found his superhero work especially to be rather up and down. But I think by the end of this story... I was really into it, but if nothing else, for me, Matt Kent's work is completely overshadowed by the art. I loved the art on this book so much because to me it was just a real throwback to some of the you know earlier stuff, like even some of the work that Anne Nesenti did when she was writing Spider-Man. There was just some crazy stuff going on, and so I kind of felt like it harkened back to that. And so for me, even though I'm not sure where the story's going per se, and I'm not 100% sure that I like it, but I'm in because of the art.
Chris?
Actually, I didn't enjoy this book. I found the first issue really... jam-packed, and it moved really fast. That art you like, I understand how you like it, and I like some of it as well. But for me, Peter Parker should never look scary. And he was a gaunt Edward Allan Poe-like character in this, and somehow, it just seemed like Peter Parker's voice was coming out of somebody else. I didn't connect with this book at all. I didn't enjoy it.
Well, this book was quite a journey, is how I'll put it. Basically, Spider-Man is this miniseries. I'll give the concept for this miniseries. Spider-Man is in having some sort of living nightmare for some reason. We don't 100% know. A lot of confusing stuff is happening. Arcade is voice of whoever set this up, but is not the person who has set up this situation where Spider-Man is apparently going to have to defeat 99 villains in a row. So as a concept, it's cool. And I bet you I'm going to enjoy all five, but this issue is a throwaway. I mean, I agree with you, Brett. I think Marco Rudy... I think here's Matt Kent, really talented writer, and Marco Rudy, really talented artist, but no chemistry. When I talked about how Andy Diggle knew to get out of the way, Matt Kent doesn't know to get out of the way of Marco Rudy. He's a lot, despite all the crazy and inventive art in this, it's way overwritten within the pages on it, I think. And also, I understand what they're trying to do. The character, the Peter Parker, like, I don't understand, like I said, they should have done something to set it up. When does the story take place? It's just, I think, essentially like a out of continuity old Spider-Man story, but they don't do a really good job of setting that up, of telling us kind of why is Peter Parker, who's dead, there, and like just a little something just to give us an idea. I think to lead us into it would have been nice. Just that this is out of continuity story from the past, that's fine, or, you know. But what you had here was the character is confused, and in order to do that, they're making the reader confused to feel like he's a part of his journey. But in doing so, all they leave you is confused instead of like you're confused and not enjoying it instead of confused and you are enjoying it. That said, the last panel had me going, I think it's going to settle down from here. And now we're going to get a little bit normal, more normal, really good story. I think it'll be a good 5-issue miniseries. I don't think it's a good issue number one. Counter thoughts, Brent?
No, not really. It could be. No? It, like, I'll agree with you in most cases. Yeah. I mean, it could be awful, quite frankly. I mean, but for me, I'm in because of the art, like I said. Yeah. So
I'm in because I think the concept is strong enough that it'll work as a 5-issue. But I might kick myself for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I could, too.
The Dark Horse gives us the Occultist, Brett. That came to us from the creators of Revival, Tim Seeley and Mike Norton. I think this is volume 2, number 1, though I'm not 100% sure of that.
It is.
They're certainly referencing a lot of stuff in the past. Brett, what is the Occultist?
A kid who has some level of occult powers and uses them to help fight occult-style crimes?
Yeah, he has a book that gives him these powers called The Sword he's trying to master.
But this year's part of your Project Black Sky from Dark Horse.
Yeah.
And what this here is for me is a piece of abject trash.
Yeah.
This is one of the most horrifically written books conceivable in my mind. The concept itself, you know, from Richardson and Seeley, like, might be passable, but the writing on it is just so bad. I hate the character. The art's fine, although I think it's really weird because the police, I assume it's a police officer that, like, detective or whatever that he's got an interest in, but he's young and she looks like she's like 14 years old. So,
yeah.
So the art's just really weird in that regard because you're either old or you're really young, and there's not that many faces either. So he's kind of got that issue there. You know, this is not a good book, and I don't think anybody should buy it.
You ever get the sense that a writer and artist are as bored as you are reading it? I had a terrible book. There's no reason this should have been. This should have been nixed way before this point. DC Dark Horse just wants a superhero universe so bad they're willing to throw anything in there.
Well, you know, when it's co-created by the president of Dark Horse, then it's going to get greenlit.
That'll usually work. And the thing is Tim Seeley is getting work, and Tim Seeley has a little bit of momentum and buzz, but I just don't really, I don't see the evidence that he's a strong writer. I mean, maybe it'll come about, maybe he'll get better. I don't know. I mean, you guys have already said it so well. There's really nothing to add. I don't even think it was bad. I think it was boring, which in some ways I think is worse than bad. So let's move on from it, Brett. I think we've all had enough of the Occultist. Let's talk about Shadow now. The concept of this is the Shadow, who himself is able to live for a really long time thanks to the techniques he's learned in the East, is still alive, is still the same guy, and now portraying the grandson of the original Shadow, though it's the same guy. So it's basically the Shadow that's always been around, but now in the modern world. Brett?
Well, see, now this is another example of the photorealistic art, but to me this is the prime example of the of the way back end of the spectrum of photorealism.
Yeah, if you had the Granoff was the best, and then you had the Bushido art was the middle, this is the bottom.
This is the absolute bottom. This is like you can't get worse than this in my mind. I was completely taken out of whatever the hell the story was in the book because the art was just too strange. Like it's beautiful in its own way, but it so didn't fit. It doesn't fit with a comic book.
If you put this art on the right cover, it could be tremendous.
And he's trying so desperately to ape Alex Ross, which of course is understandable, to a certain degree, given the company and stuff like that. But honestly, I mean, and you know, really, without even getting into the story, like the story by itself is completely what it is, and it's another shadow book from Dynamite. Yay. And I'm so bored. Like, I didn't want to read this book at the beginning. I didn't want to read this book halfway through the book. And by the end of this book, I wish I hadn't read it. So, you know, it's nothing there.
Yeah, I understand what you guys are saying, or what Brett's saying. It has its problems. I'm giving this one a marginal pass, though, because it helped me realize what I hate about Dynamite Shadow Books. In this Shadow Book, they do something I like that they don't do in the other books, is you never see the Shadow in his full form. He never comes out in the light. He's actually a little spooky in this, and that's the Shadow I want to see. Yes, there's script problems. There's art problems. But I connected to this Shadow more than any other Shadow that's existed in Dynamite. It has things I really like. And some snappy dialogue. It's inconsistent, but that there was a couple lines that I liked. I can't find them right now, but yeah, it's a marginal pass.
This is a book where the script, the story idea is fine. The concept is fine. The dialogue is fine. The pacing is fine. I mean, yes, we've seen this type of story, everything basically. There's absolutely no surprises. You can say, you know exactly who everybody is and how they're going to go and what their real actions are, real motivations are, and what's going to happen next. You can predict it all 10 pages ahead of time. But it's not badly done, except for the art, which is below average. It's not fine. That leaves you with a book that's just not really worth your time. Again, boring. I think my major issue with this book, though, is it's Shadow now, and there's very little of to make this could have taken. I don't think you had to change anything, except for say this takes place in the 1940s to make this take place in the 1940s. I don't think there's anything in this book that places it in today's world other than saying it's in today's world and he's his grandson. Like, other than that, I can't think of anything. I can't think of anything in the technology, in the different, in the slang, anything that may be anything. And that's, so considering it's Shadow now, it kind of sucks. Can you guys think of anything?
It's the Russian mafia instead of the regular mafia.
Hey, yay.
The cars were less cool.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
No. For the most part, no.
Well, Brett, The Witching Hour is our last book of the week. Another book from DC's Vertigo. It's an anthology book. Is there anybody who you really want to point out here?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the first couple of stories, I mean, anthology books are so damn hard. And the first couple of stories I started reading and I was just like, wow, these are actually, they're good stories. And I thought that I knew exactly where the book was going. And then, to me, really, it went off the rails from that point on. Suddenly the concept of witches in the stories became a little looser. And so as the witches became looser, my interest waned, and really, I just, it's just so massively long that I completely lost interest. So I didn't really like it.
I loved this book. I really did. My one problem with the book is I didn't read it on a spooky Halloween night. I love how the binding of this anthology just seems to, all the stories have the word witch in them. It's just artists playing. Anthologies are so hard to do, and I don't think there's a weak story in the bunch. Each one, for me, knocked it out of the park, all in different ways. However, if you're looking for a book this Halloween to just savor, I'd say you can't go wrong with The Witching Hour. I truly enjoyed the book.
I'd say the first story is really good, and then the second story is pretty good, not quite as good. And the third story is not quite as good as that, and the fourth story is worse than that, and then the fifth story is really bad.
You didn't enjoy the Dead Boy Detectives?
No, I thought it was bad.
I love the Dead Boy.
The Mars one is actually the worst one.
Oh, God, the Mars one was so awful.
It was terrible.
I couldn't get past that story just because...
It's like 8 pages long, Brett, but it's like he tried to fit a whole 4-issue miniseries into that 8 pages, and yet it also somehow felt underwritten because you didn't get everything, like you felt like you were missing pieces of it. Like it was jumping around. It's really weird that way. And this is the problem with a lot of times with anthologies. I go, boy, that would be a great full book or a great 3-issue miniseries, and you're fitting into 8 pages. And this suffers a lot from that. There's 9 stories here. I think one is quite good. 2 are pretty good. 6 are not really good. Certainly 1 or maybe 2 of those are just awful. And I would say, obviously, hey, they're trying to tie into Halloween, but... I would say spend your money on the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund if you only have one anthology. And if you have money for both, still find something else to spend your money on. Avoid this sucker. All right. Well, varying opinions. Email us your opinions, comics@wetalkpodcast.com. I'm at @Mo_WeTalk, M-O, no E on my name. Brett?
B-R-E-T-T _WeTalk on the Twitter.
Chris_WeTalk on the Twitter. Always give us a shout out. We enjoy it.
And, of course, he is at @CubReporterK if you're missing our missing host.
Fallen friend.
He should be back next week. I have a story from a friend of mine that I may share next week that was kind of interesting, but I wanted to get everybody's opinion on. Some talk that next week we'll go back to the Batman to rank all the best Batman villains. So that may be the show concept. And until then, thanks very much to Comicosity, and we are OUT.